If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
Impress your friends. Amaze your coworkers. Make your family proud. Here's what you need to know. I'm going to tell you
what you need to know. Fourth quarter of the program begins right now with our need to know. It's brought to you by our friends at Easton Roofing. Joe Spiker's fantastic group. Ready to come serve you. Estimates always free. Suggestions built on integrity. Let Easton Roofing educate you about every possible solution to your roofing need. They can take care of you the way they've taken care of me and my family with our roof. They didn't come in telling us we needed to replace everything, which was my fear, just a couple of little repairs, and we were off and running. And right now, mention 810, get 10% off up to $500 on a re-roof, roof repairs, attic insulation, or gutters. That's right, mention 810 and save 10% up to $500. Go to EastonRoofing.com for more details. Easton Roofing, getting you back to life faster. Remember, that estimate has to be written and signed between now and March 18th. Now, this is not an offer or inducement to pay part or all of any insurance deductible. Easton Roofing. See them online at EastonRoofing.com. Biggest news of the day, Tiger Woods, one car, rollover crash. Jaws of life were needed to get him out of the car. Sustained multiple leg injuries, has had surgery or is still in surgery. I'm not sure. I haven't heard if what the word is on that, but having surgery on the legs, the injuries are not life-threatening. And in the state of California, how many emergency personnel does it take to have a press conference about a one-car crash? The answer to that question is seven. It takes seven different people.
That's quite a group, isn't it?
Yeah, about a one-car crash. Were you or I, Curtis, in a one-car crash, the press conference would be...
Well, mine would be a non-existent.
Okay, there would not be one. We would not. they would not care. They'd be like, you know, can you get them out of here? Can you move? Can you walk? Then move. Let's go. Get going. Big 12 announcing the makeup schedule. The games, they are going to make up a handful of the games, but not all of the games. 12 games total to be made up the week of Monday, March 1st. Oklahoma at Oklahoma State on Monday. Baylor at West Virginia. By the way, the Baylor-West Virginia game that was scheduled for Thursday has been canceled and moved back. I think this is a clear move to give Baylor as good a chance as possible to get to the season undefeated and secure a number one seed. That's my personal opinion. I don't hate it. I think it's good for the Big 12 overall, and I don't think anybody was going to catch them for the first, you know, the number one spot in the league. So what matters? But I would have tried to have played as many games as possible. We're talking about kids, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22-year-old kids that play in, you know, AAU tournaments where they play, you know, I don't know, 50 games a night. For crying out loud. Anyway, the Tuesday schedule, Baylor at West Virginia at 4, TCU at Texas Tech, Texas at Iowa State. The Thursday schedule, Iowa State at Texas Tech, Oklahoma State at Baylor, TCU at West Virginia, Texas at OU. Saturday, Oklahoma State at West Virginia, Iowa State at K-State. That's the only one of the two local schools involved in a game, Iowa State at K-State, so the Cats get another shot at grabbing a victory. Texas Tech at Baylor starts off Sunday, and then Texas at TCU. So Baylor picks up three games. Baylor will play at West Virginia on Tuesday, just to highlight them because they had the most games missed. They will host Oklahoma State, and they will finish up hosting Texas Tech. Three games, only one roadie, and not playing Oklahoma.
No, I mean, the one roadie is probably the best team of the three, but that's... That's a small detail.
Yeah.
And eat much.
So they're going to pack in some games here in the Big 12. Dayton Moore talking to the media today. Of course, the young pitching has been the topic of discussion, will be for this team throughout the course of the year. Dayton asked what the approach would be for the young arms in camp.
Well, you know, Mike and I talk about this a lot because obviously there's going to be a gap between the major league season and the minor league season. And so, you know, we'll try to space it out a little bit, you know, with guys that we know for sure are going to be in minor league camp. I mean, historically, it's been very rare for us ever to invite players to major league camp who realistically don't have a shot to make the major league team. There are exceptions from year to year. But, you know, historically, I was raised in the game where you don't bring a player to major league camp unless he's got a chance to win a job. Well, because of, you know, the where we are right now in the industry and the rhythm of the 2020 season, how it's, set up, how it's structured, you know, there's going to be that gap. So we're going to have to, you know, the Asa Lacy's of the world and, you know, guys like that, you know, we probably won't, you know, get them too much game time, especially early. We'll just see how it plays out late, if there is innings for him.
Asa Lacy and Bobby Witt Jr. are the two names that you immediately turn to. Okay, so there's, we don't bring guys up that there's no shot of them making the team.
Traditionally.
Yeah, traditionally. I'll call that a battle of semantics. Those guys aren't making the team.
Yeah, no.
And so, you know, can you see any scenario where Bobby Witt goes from playing, what, short season A-ball to the big leagues? I mean, I know there was a year in between where he was in, you know, the, what was it, the supplemental camp or the alternative site.
Oh, yeah, alternate site, yeah.
Alternate site and working against guys there. But he's not making the team. So I don't care. I'm not like, God damn it, Dayton, stop lying to us. No, not at all. That's not what I'm getting at. But I just, I think there's a little gamesmanship in that. I think those guys are being brought up to be around the fellas and get a taste of what big league camp looks like to motivate them to get to the big leagues. That's what I think their stop is. Now, Asa Lacy, as a college pitcher and a high-level college pitcher, I could see making the club or being called up to the club at the end of the year. I'll be shocked if Bobby Witt Jr. Gets it done that fast. That would really surprise me. What are the expectations for the team? Dayton Moore said the goal is not just to reach the team's ceiling, but to go past it.
I mean, the team that wins the World Series is going to overachieve in some way that they didn't expect, and that's just the nature of our game. Assuming we stay healthy, which we certainly expect we will, there's no reason to think otherwise. And players prepare the way I mentioned, we should reach our ceiling. And you know, look, you have two good months and you play 500 the rest of the way, you're probably in the playoffs. If you have one great month and play 500 the rest of the way, you're probably in the playoffs. And so, you know, once you get in, as we all know, a lot of good things can happen, and especially in our environment in Kauffman Stadium with a fan base and a community that supports our teams as well as anybody in the country.
There's one part of that that was interesting to me.
Which was?
Assuming we stay healthy, which, you know, there's no reason to think otherwise, except it's your team. That's a lot of guys who get hurt a lot, and you're coming off a team and one of the oddest seasons ever in which no one had built up any innings or at-bats. There's reasons to think otherwise.
For a guy who mentions the nature of our game a lot, he seems to be missing the nature of their game and the injuries. But it's spring, and be optimistic. I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer. I like the team to win more than the 71.5 that the over-under total is. And I think 500 is a possibility for this team. And if you can creep a little bit past 500, then you're in the mix for the playoffs. And who knows what they would do coming down the stretch. Maybe they'd go get a big bat and finish off the lineup. I tend to doubt it. I think they're going to be a little bit more for the long haul this go-round, but we'll see where it goes. Dayton Moore talking about where the game is as far as tanking goes. Dayton asked if it's good for the game when teams don't make a competitive effort every single year.
Focusing just simply on what we do and not understanding what the other 29 teams do, what they're under, what the direction of ownership is, where they think, you know, their opportunity is to win. I mean, we don't know any other way. I think you're trying to inspire people to follow your team, and you're trying to inspire young people to be a part of this game and want to play this game. And so I think what we've always tried to do is be as competitive as we possibly can. Everybody will tell you that whatever our budget is financially, we've taken it right to the max every single year. We've spent whatever's been given to us. That's on record. You know, I think it's really important to try to win in each and every year. You know, when, you know, I remember having a conversation with Adam Wainwright many, many years ago. I had the same conversation with Khalil Lee here when we did the Benintendi trade. And I said, look, here's the deal. You're going to be a major league player someday. And when you're in that clubhouse, you're going to realize that you're one of 26 guys that has a very small window of opportunity to win a championship. And you're one of 26 guys that has a very small window of opportunity to maximize the financial rewards of this game. And so you're going to want to be a part of an organization and a team and an ownership that's going to do everything they can to put the best team on the field to support those players and the coaching staff and the manager, who has to put their professional reputation on the line each and every night and answer questions multiple times a day about what went right and what went wrong. And so I think to be a great steward of the game and to continue to grow the game in the ways that we think are the most healthy, you've got to bust your tail for the good of the players, the fans, and the coaching staff and ownership and everybody surrounding the game. Put the best team you can on the field, period. That's what it's all about.
I think Dayton Moore is going to be an interesting case study here for the game of baseball because he is not willing to embrace the tank. And we're going to find out whether or not this works. Like, if he goes and wins another world championship, he, you know, in one breath you can say, look, the guy didn't tank and they won again. So you do not have to tank to rebuild your team into a championship club, all right? But then he did lose 100 games back-to-back years and was on pace to lose 93 games last year. Yeah. So he may not have tanked, but he had tank-like results.
First team in a century to have back-to-back 100-loss seasons within 5 years of a title.
And I'll tell you what, I mean, for a guy who, and I was stunned by this, it made sense once I heard it, but my initial reaction was, ugh, boy. You know, the fact that since he took over, he has the, it's either third or fourth worst win percentage in baseball. So, yes, he can build a championship. And I'm not trying to run Dayton Moore out of town. I believe he can build a championship. But for a guy who seems, I don't want to say adamant, because he's not, he doesn't call me up and go, listen, you got to stop talking about this tanking. It's bad for baseball. Right? But when he's asked the question, he gives you an honest answer. And he gets asked the question quite a bit. I've heard him answer that question. I've asked it to him a number of different ways. One of them being last year, like, hey, listen, were there things you'd do different? Like, would you? And he said, yeah, there are things we'd probably do different, you know, looking at it. And I think they underestimated. I think they, you know, maybe felt they were going to be bad in 18, didn't realize how bad they were going to be in 19. But my point is this, like, he's just such a difficult guy to pin down because he's adamant about not tanking, but he has the fourth worst win percentage out there.
Yeah, if the. You
so
say,
I mean, you're like over the long haul, your path sucked.
Right.
Right.
Yes. No.
You know, now for short term, you managed to build a team, and you could even make the case that, well, he didn't tank, but the organization, through incompetence, incompetent ownership, so the ownership got a lot better, but they were not equipping Allard Baird with the resources it took to win. They basically tanked without knowing they were tanking, and Dayton Moore benefited from that. Moustakas, number two overall pick. Hosmer, number three overall pick. Hochaver, number one overall pick. Alex Gordon, number two overall pick. All these high picks came together and were a big part of their world championship. So I get it, right, that you don't want to tank, but you benefited really from the results of tanking, unplanned tanking, but tanking. Now you preach against it, and you've been down at the bottom again. I think it's going to be – his story is a fascinating one when it comes to baseball. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk college basketball. Our college basketball insider, Gary Parrish, joins us next.
The Program with Soren Petro.
I forgot the question. I do that a lot.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. 32 leagues, 350 teams, 7 nights a week. There is nothing quite like college basketball. And no one covers it any better than he does. He's our college basketball insider, Gary Parrish of CBS Sports, only on the Program.
Welcome back. You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB as we finish strong here in the 5 o'clock hour. We turn to the man, the best in the business when it comes to covering college basketball. He is Gary Parrish. He's on our T-Mobile guest line. He's brought to you by our friends at Henhouse. Go to henhouse.com right now to see all the specials. Beautiful day today. We're up into the upper 60s. If you're not grilling out tonight, you are missing the boat. There will be burgers on the Petro family's grill, and they came from Henhouse, that meat counter award-winning, the best in the business. Check out all the great specials every week. Back at the meat counter at your neighborhood henhouse, go to henhouse.com to see all the specials. Mr. Parrish, sir, welcome. How are you, my friend?
I am wonderful, and it's funny you say that because, honestly, 30 minutes ago, my wife asked me, should you go by the meat market and get steaks for the grill tonight? Because after the week we had last week, to have this kind of weather, it seems wild to not take advantage of it. So I, like you, will be on the grill in my backyard tonight.
You are a good man, and I am proud of you, as I hope everybody else is. So if we've got upper 60s today, you've got what, 96, 97 there in Memphis? What do you got?
We are 68 degrees at this moment. It makes me I'm very appreciative to have all my jobs, but there's nothing I would have rather done today than been on the golf course, given how many rounds of golf I lost in recent weeks because of weather. But 68 degrees today, supposed to be nice the rest of the week. I'll get out there at some point.
All right, very good. Let's talk a little college basketball, and I want to start with something that, full disclosure, we're taping Gary today because of his schedule, because we think there might be more information come down on this, so stay tuned. But Baylor and West Virginia, their Thursday night game, about ready, according to Matt Norlander, of course, your co-host on the Eye on College Basketball podcast, which I recommend to any college basketball, any hoop fan out there. It is must listen for you, so check it out. But stating that basically they're gonna call this off. It's not on Baylor. It's not Baylor ducking anyone. It's a Big 12 decision. Why? Why would they do this?
I wish I had a better answer for you. I'm honestly not sure why you would be messing with a predetermined schedule at this point, because of, as it pertains, when there's no COVID issues that are dictating it. Like, I've been having these conversations in my own hometown as it relates to the University of Memphis's remaining schedule, because they had to cancel a big game against Houston. They had to cancel a big game against Wichita State. There's some thought they'll get one of them back, probably the Houston game, but probably not both. And people had suggested, well, why don't you just, do away with Memphis's game against Tulane, because it's a nothing game, and fill in Wichita State there. And the point I had made is that I just think if you start – it's one thing to try to make up games however you can make them up. But when you start canceling games – or removing them from the schedule for non-COVID reasons, I think you start tinkering with the integrity of the regular season title and the resumes in general. Now, maybe in the middle of a pandemic, that's not the biggest deal in the world, but I was surprised when I saw that tweet from Norlander, because I didn't think this is something that any league would do, start messing around with regular season games for non-COVID issues.
My assumption, and again, I apologize if we've already reported how this came down, but at least you're getting our thoughts going into it, what we thought about it. We'll find out if we're right. But my assumption is it's because they're going to pack three and maybe even four games on the other side. Maybe they're going to change, something, and one of them is going to be a West Virginia game next week, and they didn't want to put too many games on Baylor, have them make them play 3-7 and 3-7. But, I mean – I know it's unfortunate. Like, I don't know how you could justify that side of it when, everybody's having their schedule dumped upside down. KU had to play a 3-7. I know they didn't have to do 3-7 back to back, but that's kind of what the whole scramble around the COVID and now the wacky winter weather that canceled games as well. I mean, that's just kind of the cost of doing business, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, Georgia Tech had to do 4-7 a couple of weeks ago. I know that it's unusual, but it's not too taxing. I mean, I think sometimes we forget that, in the NBA, they play back-to-backs all the time. The Grizzlies just did 4-5 nights with travel mixed in. I mean, I understand the argument about you don't want to put too much on student athletes. I would just argue it's not too much on student athletes. Like, this is a once in a generation type thing we're dealing with. And I don't think it's crazy to ask a basketball team to play, you know, six games in 2 weeks. I promise you, every player on Baylor's team did that when they were in high school. And if they're lucky enough to get to the NBA, they'll do it then as well.
They'll play eight games in like two and a half days in an AAU tournament.
Oh, sure.
I mean,
like Peach Jam is considered the gold standard of grassroots basketball. And even then, you're going to play a semifinal game on a Sunday morning and a championship game on Sunday afternoon. I mean, even for the highest stakes trophy available, you're playing multiple games in the same day. So again, playing 3-7 or 6-14, it's unusual, but it's not that big of a deal. Certainly not as big of a deal as I've heard others try to make it out to be.
Yeah, it just blows my mind. LeBron James at 36 years old and having played however many games in the last 7 days, played 43 minutes. I mean, I just, you know, we're talking about, you know, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23-year-old kids. They can get up and down the floor a few times, for crying out loud. That always baffles me. Is it possible that this is the big, because it's they've been very adamant all along that this is the Big 12's call, right? It's the league office. Is this the league office trying to protect their number one seed and saying, look, big picture, what we need is to give Baylor, and in particular a school not named Kansas, every opportunity to play their way deep and get to a Final Four, hopefully get to a finals, and even more, win a national championship? Because the one thing, while the league always has high ratings, its championship record, its Final Four pedigree says Kansas and everybody else. That's why it was so important for Texas Tech a couple of years ago. Do you think it could be that easy that they're trying to manipulate their best chance for success in the tournament?
See, this is exactly why you shouldn't do it. My answer to that question is no. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say no. But it leads you right there. You know, like, that's the first thing that pops into anybody's head. Oh, they're trying to ensure that Baylor remains undefeated. They're trying to ensure that Baylor gets the number one seed. I do not believe that's the motivation here, if only because every coach in the league not named Scott Drew would be throwing a fit. Like, it's just not – whatever you gain from it, it's not worth what you lose. But, you know, again, this is why you don't do something like this, because it bleeds into conspiracies and it allows people to let their minds wander. The way this should have gone is the way basically every other league has handled these types of situations this season. You know, Baylor is the highest profile, best team to go on this long of a pause, but it's not the only team that's gone on this long of a pause. The way other leagues have handled it is, you postpone the games that need to be postponed. You play the games when you return. You play the games that are on your schedule, and you try to fit in makeup games wherever you can. No other league, as far as I know, has removed scheduled games from somebody's schedule based on non-COVID issues. So this is a first, and that's why it's at least somewhat controversial.
And again, in real time, you may know the answer to this as we're taping this here before we get going today. We're taping in the 1 o'clock hour today with Gary Parrish. Is it possible that you know, and I'm curious if this has ever happened to you as a reporter, that Matt Norlander got used as a trial balloon to see what the reaction would be, and they'll be like, oh, yeah, we were never going to do that?
I would hope not, but yes, that kind of stuff does happen. I've volunteered before to, like, hey, let me float this out. First off, like, I'll tell you how this is going to play, but if you don't believe me, let me float it out there as a quote possibility. And then you'll see the reaction and you'll know why you shouldn't do what you're about to do. In fact, it can work the other way as well. I guess I shouldn't give up too many sources, but there was a time where Tubby Smith was still the head coach at the University of Memphis. And I knew for a fact that the school was thinking about firing him after only two seasons, not just to fire him, but specifically to hire Penny Hardaway. And they were very concerned, people in that athletic department, people on that campus, about how that would play. Firing a legend like Tubby Smith after only 2 years, and then hiring, quote, an AAU coach, high school coach, who obviously had access to the number one prospect in America. And I was adamant. It's the, not only is it the smart thing for you to do, but it will be wildly popular. And after countless conversation, I said, if you'll allow me to source this, and just all I'm going to write is that it's something you're considering as a school, as an athletic department, just let me write and tweet that it's under consideration. You'll see how wildly popular it is. And I was given the okay to do that. And it was so wildly popular that a week later they fired Tubby Smith and hired Penny Hardaway. So these trial balloon things, they do exist. They work both ways. I don't think that's what happened here with Matt. But, again, I can't speak in absolutes about it. I simply do not know.
All right, we're talking right now with Gary Parrish, the best in the business when it comes to covering college basketball, also a trial balloon floater, as we're finding out right now. I'm curious. I've always enjoyed, and it's been a number of years since I had them, but Chris Mack was kind of a regular at the Radio Row at Final Four when he was at Xavier, and I would always jump at the opportunity when they'd say, hey, you want to talk to Chris Mack? Yeah, hell yeah, I do. Sit him down, and I always enjoyed those conversations. I thought he was a very thoughtful guy and wasn't shocked at all that he went to Louisville and not shocked that he's having success. I am shocked that he was part of a video, and I actually do buy his reason for it, that on where he thought it was going. I think it's a bit naive to think it will never get out, but I think there may have been a couple of pops on the night, too, that maybe inhibited his judgment on that, which I have no problem. The man's at his home. There may be a couple of pops, a couple of Coronas going in me tonight. You know, I'm not going to hate on that. Whatever you do in your home is your business. And I do, and maybe it's my own kind of liking the guy that I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt where somebody else will say, yeah, whatever. How surprising is it that, you know, a guy that's as successful as he is would find himself involved in this kind of video that would make that kind of misstep?
Surprising, but I think you touched on something that's important. And I say this as someone who enjoys a beverage every once in a while, perhaps more often than I should. You let your guard down, you know? Like, I would say that 90% of the poor decisions I've made in life have been alcohol induced. And so that seems like what Chris found himself in. Like, there is no scenario where a sober Chris Mack or a sober Division I coach, period, a public figure, makes that video at all, period. It just doesn't happen. He had had too many drinks. He thought he was amongst friends. He's playing around on camera and then probably forgot about it if he ever remembered it to begin with. And then, boom, it pops up after a 45-point loss to North Carolina. I did see somebody joke that he probably leaked the video himself to get people to stop talking about the 45-point loss to North Carolina. I don't think that's true, but it's at least a theory that exists. You know, I'm not Chris Mack. Hardly anybody cares about me. But, like, when I'm having drinks and, you know, maybe letting my guard down a little bit, if I saw somebody holding an iPhone at me, particularly like in my house with my, you know, gathered with friends, I'd be like, no. We're not, put your phone down. We're not putting anything on video. Why Chris didn't do that, I'm not sure. Again, I think it's probably alcohol induced, but it's a bad look. Like, I've known Chris since he was an assistant at Xavier. I like him, but to be, I mean, here's the other thing that gets lost in it, besides, you know, you're talking wild about John Calipari. You know, he's maskless, violating his own athletic department's protocols. If we're going to, and I don't think it was too much criticism, but if we're going to criticize and question the North Carolina basketball players for having fun maskless after a big win over Duke, you know, why is it not, you know, similarly bad for Chris Mack, the Louisville coach, you know, having a good time maskless with friends after a big win over Kentucky? So there's a lot going on there. It's probably a story that won't matter much outside of that state, you know, by the end of this week, but it was a bad look and an embarrassing look and a poor decision. And, you know, I do think you can still learn from things in your 40s. I hope so, at least. And hopefully Chris will learn from this.
Two things that come to mind. One, that's the kind of thing that gets you fired when they want to fire you. You know, if he had been losing in all this, well, that's the final straw. We can't take any more of this. You know, he's got to go. When you're winning and they're happy with you, they're going to be much more forgiving. They may fine him for violating the policies, of which he's got plenty of money, and that's probably the best thing they should do. In fact, he should probably suggest it. Why don't you hit me with a fine? We'll give it to a charity. We make the point that you're not going to tolerate my lack of judgment here. I agree that it's the right thing. I've learned my lesson, and we move on. That's how I think this will probably play out. So I think that's interesting. And then the other side is, though, is there truth in the alleging that, you know, and I forget the assistant coach's name now.
Kenny Payne.
Is there truth in the fact that, you know, Kenny Payne was a big part of the success there? I mean, is that, you know, don't you at least as a, you know, have to scratch your head a little bit when that assertion comes out during John Calipari's worst season as the head coach of Kentucky?
I say this with all due respect to Kenny Payne, but I don't think Kenny Payne has been the secret to John Calipari's Hall of Fame career. I think John got caught with a bad team in the middle of a pandemic for reasons that we've discussed previously, and it is little more than that. I do think he'll alter his recruiting his habits, the way he goes about roster building, and he has publicly acknowledged that he needs to and he will. But I don't think it's as simple, and I don't even think Chris Mack would actually tell you this, that Kenny Payne left and now Kentucky is in bad trouble as it pertains to its rivalry with Louisville. You know, Kentucky is still going to continue to recruit at the highest level. John's still going to coach the team. They'll bounce back, I would assume, pretty strongly as soon as next season.
Okay. Is Duke finding itself? They lay the beat down on Syracuse. You and I have talked as I sit here discussing this subject with you, wearing my Syracuse hoodie. I don't think this team's very good. I don't think it's any big shakes that they got that win, but that doesn't, you know, that was still the only team that Duke could play. Are they finding themselves and going to play their way into the tournament?
I don't think there's any doubt that they are finding themselves. There's obviously doubt about whether they'll make the tournament or not. But if you ask me right now, bet it yes or no, I would bet yes that Duke is going to be in the NCAA tournament. And I would not have said that as recently as a week ago, probably. But, you know, they're undeniably better without Jalen Johnson. Like, I don't know. I still to this moment don't know why what Jim Boeheim said was so controversial. He said they're better without him, and he was keeping other good players from playing. Well, clearly they're better without him. They're 5-8 with Jalen Johnson in the lineup, 6-0 without Jalen Johnson in the lineup. That's better without him. And by definition, he was keeping other good players from playing every minute that he played. So, you know, right, so they upset Virginia, pound Syracuse, and now they're 6-6 in the first two quadrants with two quadrant three losses. Now, that is not a great resume. But if you go look at the last team in the bracket right now, according to Jerry Palm, it's Indiana. And Indiana right now is 4-4. Indiana right now is 8-8, rather, in the first two quadrants with two quadrant three losses. So you got a Duke team that is 6-6 with two quad three losses, an Indiana team that is 8-8 with two quad three losses. Duke, if it wins this weekend, adds another win inside the first two quadrants to go above 500. I say all that to say this. If Duke handles business this weekend, and I suspect that it will, you know, it's a game in which they'll be favored against Louisville at home, then Duke is suddenly above 500 in the first two quadrants. They've still got those two quadrant three losses, but the resume, I believe, becomes better than Indiana's. And when Jerry Palm, Joe Lunardi update their brackets, you're going to see Duke right there on the bubble and maybe actually in the field.
Yeah, and the name Duke will give them the benefit of the doubt and, quite frankly, should give them the benefit of the doubt.
Let me add one other thing to it. You know, this isn't like a pass or fail line, but Duke is top 30 at KenPom right now. And that is a metric that the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee uses. And for whatever it's worth, in the past six NCAA tournaments, every team that's been 30th or better at KenPom on Selection Sunday has made the field except for four. There's only been four teams left out with a top 30 KenPom ranking on Selection Sunday in the past six NCAA tournaments. So as long as Duke is, you know, I think basically beat Louisville this weekend, split at Georgia Tech, at North Carolina next week, and then, you know, not take a bad loss in the ACC tournament. That combined with the strong computer numbers, I think probably gets Duke in the field. It would be wild to think like we could have a Duke in the first four. I mean, that might really – that would be awesome. But and that might really be on the table. But there is an obvious path for Duke to make the field, and it didn't look that way recently.
All right, I got to ask this question on Sunday Sound Off, the TV show I do on Sundays, about whether or not the you know, the streak. What do we make of Kansas, you know, starting to put together some wins? They've won five in a row, and certainly the Texas Tech win looked like a really good one. I think it is a good win, certainly really good. Yeah, maybe it's a battle of semantics, but it doesn't look as good after Texas Tech loses last night. So what do you think? Has Kansas found itself, or is it just a product of bad and so-so opponents?
I actually think it's both. And listen, I'm not right about all of my predictions when it comes to games. Like, you should see my sportsbook account. But I did, when Kansas fell out of the top 25, say they'll be right back in it next week because they're about to go on a winning streak because everything is about to ease up from a scheduling perspective. And here they are, you know, since dropping out of the AP poll, they've won five straight. And two of the wins are over Iowa State, one of them is over Kansas State. And though Oklahoma State isn't great, that's a team I've got in my top 25 and won this morning. And though Texas Tech, I thought less of than most, less of them than most, just by, you know, monitoring their resume inside the first two quadrants, they haven't been good. They've won some, but they've lost more than they've won. I had them out of my top 25 and won even before last night's loss. So you can absolutely point to the schedule and say, yeah, but, you know, that's not wins over Baylor. It's not wins over Texas. It's not wins over West Virginia. But like you said, you can only play the schedule that's in front of you. I will say, so CJ Moore at The Athletic had a really nice story earlier today that talked about specifically the way Kansas is guarding ball screens now. And they have put together a five-game stretch where they are better on a defensive points per possession basis than literally anybody in the country, and have put together a five-game stretch against high major competition that is better than any five-game stretch any team in the country has had this season. So, like I said, I think it's both. Some of this is schedule-related, but some of it is they have really figured some things out on the defensive end, and I think they've become closer to what we thought they were going to be in the preseason, which is a consensus top 20, top 15 team, and a team that, yes, can advance deep into the bracket. Maybe not go win it all, but at this point, if you told me Kansas was in the Final Four, it wouldn't be the most shocking thing in the world to me.
Time for our Final Four, brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If an orthopedic or sports injury puts you on the bench, the same experts that care for the Royals can see you quickly. Request an appointment at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. Gary, I will start you with this. You mentioned you're taking a look at your sportsbook account. What is your login and password to your sportsbook account?
My login, I don't think I can say any of that, but I went through a weird phase. I don't even know that it's a phase. It's just a weird thing where, like, half of my passwords for things that I signed into were players' names from a very specific Big Ten school. I don't even know why I didn't go to that school. I'm not a fan of that school. It's just I made one password a player from that school and then another password a player from that school. So a lot of my passwords are former Big Ten basketball players, as weird as that might sound.
I love it. All right. Would you pick a fight with a guy who had cauliflower ear?
No, I saw the video. My Lord. First off, I wouldn't pick a fight with anybody. You know, I haven't been in a fight since fifth grade. I won that one. If it matters, I won that one. But I retired a champion in fifth grade. I'm not the fighting type, never have been. But that, you know, that's a telltale sign. Like, if somebody's got cauliflower here, that means they've been in some stuff. And you just, you leave that guy alone. The Oklahoma football player learned that lesson the hard way.
Yeah, you definitely don't put your finger in his chest and goad him into something. By the way, another sidebar. When said guy with cauliflower ear turns and looks at his buddy and smiles while you're talking smack to him, that's time to eject. That's time to get the hell out of there.
Yeah, you got to de-escalate that and get out.
Yeah. You need to eject. All right. Next 5 years, Chris Mack's record versus Kentucky will be what?
2-3. I still think annually Kentucky is going to get better players. And though I think Chris is an amazing coach, I think John is the better than he gets credit for coach. So Kentucky is still the better program. Kentucky's still going to annually have better players. It'll be more competitive than it's been, but I still think Kentucky probably wins more often than it loses.
And finally, after the Duke-Syracuse game, Boeheim got quite a platform, and at one point he made this statement. So I would ask you, does Jim Boeheim know more about college basketball than Jay Billis?
I don't know who would know more about college basketball between those two. I think Jim is obviously more accomplished as it pertains to like accomplishing things in the sport of college basketball. But I have a tremendous amount of respect for Jay. He's an obviously brilliant guy, you know, a lawyer who has carved out a career as an important voice, arguably the most important voice among media members when it comes to the sport of college basketball. So I'll let those guys argue about that. But it has been wild to see, you know, how this whole thing escalated. Because, and I will say this, I'm usually on the same side of Jay with basically everything because I think he's a smart guy and you know, he's usually right. I didn't know that he was right to be so bothered by what Jim Boeheim said about Jalen Johnson because, again, what did he say? And if you know, please tell me, what did Jim say that was wrong? He might have been out of line if you just fundamentally believe coaches shouldn't talk about other schools' players. Like, if that's just a rule of yours, I get it, I guess. But the words he actually said, what did he say that was wrong? It reminded me a little bit like when Coach K got criticized for saying, maybe we need to take a step back and think about, are we doing this the right way? That got twisted into Coach K wants to cancel the season, but he never actually said that. He was just sort of wondering, like, is this the smart thing to do? I never really understood what K said that was so wrong. And in this instance, I don't really know what Jim said that's so wrong that got Jay riled up the way it did.
Yeah, no, I would agree. Gary, it's always great talking to you. Rile us up when it comes to college basketball. Thanks so much. We'll do it again next week.
Can't wait, buddy. I'll see you. Bye.
But first, a good sense into the hour answer. Who's the only player to lead the league in getting hit by pitch 7 years in a row?
I'll try Don Baylor.
That's an excellent guess, but it is no. It is actually a guy who really, nondescript other than this record, Ron Hunt, 1968 to 1974, set the MLB record in 1971 with 50. The next highest total since 1900 is 35 by Don Baylor in 86.
Yeah, Don Baylor got hit a lot, but Ron Hunt, that's all he did, huh?
Yep.
So he was literally the Rudy Stein of baseball.
Hunt, get in there and take one.
What? But it hurts, Mr. Buttermaker. Come on, you'll do what you're told. Yes, the Bad News Bears.
Classic.
Playing for some wonderful Good Sense. I had Good Sense lunch today. You know how I ordered? I ordered on the app. It's the easiest way to order. And I had 10%. I had, what is it, $2.46, I think, off because that's my loyalty points. 10% back every time you order. I think I will have, see, as me and the wife, I think I'm going to have like about $1.40-something next time. After our sandwiches today. So go to GoodSenseSubs.com or download the app. It's the easiest way to order at Good Sense. Meats and cheese, they're sliced fresh right in front of you. They bake that bread fresh twice each day. It's Good Sense, founded in Lenexa, Kansas, locally owned and operated. That is your neighborhood Good Sense. I'll leave you with this for the kicker. I thought an entertaining interview. We got word. Shailene Woodley, who is an accomplished actress. Curtis reminded me of where I'm like, okay, what was she in? The Descendants, an Oscar-nominated movie. She was great in that movie. I thought a very good movie as well. We found out about her engagement to one Aaron Rodgers. It happened on The Tonight Show starring Jimmy Fallon. This is her talking about being engaged. Apparently it's not a big deal, being engaged to Aaron Rodgers.
He's, first of all, just a wonderful, incredible human being. But I never thought I'd be engaged to somebody who threw balls for a living. Like, I never thought as a little girl, I was like, yeah, when I grew up, I'm going to marry someone who who throws balls. Yeah. But he's really just so good at it. And
he really knows how to throw a ball. Yeah.
He can throw fastballs. He can throw slow balls, high balls, low balls. When I first met him, I think my dog like pulled me aside and was like, if you don't date this dude, I will disown you as my mother, because the 3 feet that I run with you when you throw a ball is nothing compared to the marathon I'm able to run with him. When we met also, like, I knew he was a football guy, but I didn't know like what kind of a football guy he was. And I'm still constantly learning. I'm still like, oh wow, you know, friends would be like, you gotta watch his YouTube greatest, or you got, and I was like, I don't get it. He's good. He's great.
He's
like,
really
I don't understand.
That's so funny.
Because I don't know him as a football guy. I know him as like the nerd who wants to host Jeopardy. You know, like that's the dude I know.
He loves Jeopardy. I love
that. He just happens to also be very good at sports.
That is priceless. That's as good as it gets. I'm going to marry a guy who throws balls.
I can see why he likes her. Their personalities and senses of humor certainly mesh up.
Yeah, she's got a great sense of humor. You'll hear those comments more here in the program as we move forward, no doubt. Shailene Woodley, now engaged to one Aaron Rodgers. We're out of here. We will see you again tomorrow at 2.